Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. I am G.R. Mobley. This is an educational grassroots program focused on uniting and leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again.
Well, folks, welcome back. And you know you are listening to the only show that gives you the academic evidence. You haven't heard this in a while. I keep on forgetting these things. You're listening to the only show that gives you the academic evidence and academic evidence-based solutions. If you're really looking to actually change things around, this is where you get it. Now, I know there's lots of entertainment out there, and I guess I could be entertaining, as I told the audience in Oklahoma, that I could easily sit down and tell war stories and talk about the intelligence community. You know, and then I told him, you know, I could easily entertain you regarding things, you know, my experiences in the intelligence community, but I'd have to kill you. So anyway, what is it you really want? Do you want entertainment? And I believe the reason why there's billions and billions of dollars in the entertainment industry. When I say entertainment industry, Sean Hannity, Tucker Carlson, I mean, these guys are making bank. Why? Because you want the truth. And they're going to report information that there's nothing they can do. They're only there to point out how bad it is. And the worse it gets, the more you got to know, tell me something good, tell me something good. And then they may give you a little bit of good news, but it is so insignificant. Nothing is changing things back. Remember the great news in 2016, how Trump won the election and how we were all going to just be saved and he was going to make America great. Well, hold on here. It seemed like the only reason America was great is because he was in the White House. He didn't make America great. He was what America was great about. In other words, he didn't do anything because as soon as he stepped down from office, all of the unconstitutional mechanisms, and some of them he had a hand in, all of these unconstitutional mechanisms that the federal government possessed were still there, and they became equally weaponized. And oh, by the way, when he was in office, even though he kind of constrained himself, he did not constrain Fauci. He did not constrain the federal tyranny and its involvement in the pandemic. The one thing he did good was he shut down, you know, travel, international travel between China and America, first off. And then he started shutting down travel between other nations. Okay, there we go. We need to actually start really looking what America needs instead of what America wants. Now, it is now or never, folks. There's no indication whatsoever. No signs, nothing. There's no tea leaves that are telling us otherwise. It is only going to get worse and worse and worse. And so I think it's great that we're in this position that we have this choice. We actually have a choice to do something about this, or we can just continue to allow those who are doing nothing, Mark Levin, Glenn Beck, all of these people, they're doing nothing really to fix the problem. They're making a lot of money, and they may be in a better situation than all of us when it comes down to, you know, the hammer falling on us when we fall as a nation. But I do know this, that when the hammer falls, those who have had the appearance of being the opposition, such as myself, and even more so them, they'll probably be rounded up. We'll all be probably rounded up and killed, because that's what happens when tyrants fully seize power. That's what happens. I mean, look at Pol Pot. I mean, history is filled with these types of despotic measures. So As I was thinking about this, before I get into Madison's report on the Virginia resolutions, one of the things, you know, I kept on looking at what America really wants is vengeance. You know, vengeance is a dish that's better served cold, if you know what I mean. And as a matter of fact, if people really understood what the best vengeance is, you know, they say living well is the best vengeance you can give to your enemy. Ah, but that doesn't give you the immediate satisfaction of a good old slap down. You know, a good old, you know, punch in the face. A knockout. Oh, well, there we go. Or a decimation. Scorched earth. I mean, we've kind of reached that point in our society where scorched earth happens to be the, you know, the preferred, you know, way to disengage. Oh, well, we've completely destroyed them. What we need to do is we need to really look at, you know, what is the best vengeance? Because I'm not going to be able to separate America's lust, its thirst for vengeance, out of what the progressives have done to us. But I will be able to separate some of these other things. And, you know, so when we start looking at what is the best vengeance, when I say separate some of these other things, like, the progressives have created all this unconstitutional government. Is slapping them down for doing that the best vengeance? Or is getting rid of all unconstitutional government the best vengeance? What's best for you? Slapping them down and hurting them and basically making them political enemies and somehow making them pay and having an inquisition and impeaching them but doing nothing about the tyranny? Huh? What is the best path forward? I'm telling you, folks, with the best path forward is the Constitution, getting into full compliance of the Constitution. Our enemies who are trying to destroy the Constitution and our liberties would writhe. Our enemies would just actually be, you know, kicking and flailing on the ground in the final tantrum of the energy that they possess as we basically discard all of the things that they've done and discard them. Because, folks, the Constitution does not allow enemies who seek to destroy it the ability to be a U.S. citizen. I mean, your oath and obligation as a citizen is to support and defend the Constitution against enemies, foreign and domestic. Well, the greatest enemies we face in the world today is right here in America. The greatest enemies are those people who want to change our government without going through the process. And bottom line, there are cases. As a matter of fact, in Kansas City, there is a gentleman who ran for governor who was a Republican. He was a very staunch conservative Republican. And he actually split from the ticket and actually went down this path of, you know, running for governor while, you know, the Republican Party basically chastised him. They kicked him out. They kicked him out of, I mean, he's been ostracized. The party has operated in ostracizing him. And so here he is, a representative of a body of people in Kansas, a long-term representative, very, very well loved, actually got quite a few votes for the governor position. And here's my question. What kind of government do we have? Do we have a government that is party informed? Does the party actually control those types of things? Or is it we the people? So I started thinking about how vengeance plays out in politics and how we see this. We want Trump to extract vengeance. You know what? As much as he may yammer about, you know, going after Hillary and all of those types of things, he did nothing. He really did nothing. Right? He had the opportunity to actually unleash, you know, a constitutional wrath. And more importantly, he had the opportunity to put this nation. So one of the things I'm going to do over the course of the next year or so, I'm actually going to give you the reasons and what we need to expect out of a true executive over that Constitution. We're not talking about an executive over our economy. The president doesn't have any powers in Article 2 delegated to him to control our economy. I truly believe that the government should not even be involved in our economy. We're supposed to have a free market system. We don't have a free market system because the government controls every facet of our market. So what type of market do we have if it's not free market? This is what we call a mercantile system, where the government controls every facet of it. Folks, we've been duped. We've been lied to. Everybody talks about capitalism and the free market and all this stuff, and people are trying to defend it. And nobody realizes that we've already been duped. The socialists have already collectivized most of all of their power, most all of it. And they're doing so many dirty deeds that they have no authority to do. Anyway. So the process is to start understanding the Constitution and starting to enforce it. And what we're covering right now, this is probably the most important shows that we could air in America today that actually gives you the academic evidence of what must be done when government violates the Constitution, those few powers delegated to them. What do we do when they cross that line? This is what Madison and Jefferson did, and we're going to give you all the evidence as soon as we come back, because we're going to get into Madison's report, and he's going to explain everything, folks. We'll be right back after these two promos. Thank you so much.
Have you taken the time to watch our presentation on YouTube that provided an irrefutable argument of what we have to do to save our Constitution and our Republic? I know it's over an hour and 30 minutes, but you only need to watch the first 30 minutes. If you take the time to watch this presentation, I promise it will change your paradigm regarding what our Constitution is and what we have to do if we are going to save it, our liberties, our sovereignty, and our republic. We already have answers to most of the questions that you might think of after watching this presentation, and we want to help you get to a point where you have a profound understanding of the audit and republic review process. This is why our bullet overview and flowchart of both the argument and process is available on reclaimingtherepublic.org. The sooner you get informed, the sooner you can get involved and make an impact. So go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to the Take Action page. That's where you'll find the video. Thank you so much.
If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review, as well as my description of the republic review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how republic review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.
Friends, if you have any questions or comments, we have our 24-hour comment line at 425-270-5416.
Okay, so where we left off with Madison's report on the Virginia resolutions, where it was paragraph 6, but what I failed to do is kind of help explain how he was really writing this. So I need to jump up to the fourth paragraph and start there, because this is where he actually begins dissecting everything he wrote. Have you ever written something where people come back and make accusations, or they say, well, what about this? And where do you get that? And how in the heck does that, you know, make sense, or what have you? So he is literally defending everything that he wrote, and he is expounding upon the legal justifications, the fundamental tenets that he based those resolutions on. In other words, they weren't just neat, whimsical, complaints, like, how dare you? You don't even comb your hair. What does that have to do with them passing a law or government doing something, right? Many times when you go to a city council, you go to a government meeting, and there are people there complaining. What gives you the right? How can you do these things? Whatever the complaint is, they are just complaining. Very rarely will you hear somebody get up and actually say, the law says this, and or the Constitution clearly, limits your powers, and there's no power for you to do this. So what do you base your ability to do this on if that power doesn't exist? And so this is how we call people out. Well, Madison made, when he wrote that Virginia resolution, it's the same thing with Jefferson. They attacked it academically. They refuted it on its face in every capacity. They didn't just do the front end. They went all around and actually challenged the validity entirely of these laws because they were not within the Constitution. And therefore, the process of refuting is obviously first done by the academic argument of auditing how each of these were violations. Then Madison goes into the concept how the states possess this important, just absolutely important, power and responsibility to actually step in. And so this is what he says, and this is paragraph 4, because it kind of, the first couple paragraphs is basically saying, I'm absolutely shocked kind of thing, that we're even here in this conversation. Excuse me. But this is what he says. The first of the resolutions is in the words following, resolved that the General Assembly of Virginia doth unequivocally express a firm resolution to maintain and defend the Constitution and the Constitution of the state against any aggression, either foreign or domestic, and that they will support the government of the United States in all measures warranted by the former, warranted by the Constitution. No favor, then his sixth paragraph, this is where we left off. No favorable comment can be made on the sentiments here expressed. To maintain and defend the Constitution of the United States and of their own state against every aggression, both foreign and domestic, and to support the government of the United States in all measures warranted by their Constitution are duties which the General Assembly ought always to feel, and to which on such an occasion, it was evidently proper to express their sincere and firm adherence. So, moving on, I'm going to jump now because this is where we kind of, go on because he goes into the next resolution and so forth. Then he goes into the third resolution. And so this is paragraph 10, because remember I told you the third resolution is really the key. And when we get into Madison's notes on nullification of 1834, he really drives home the third resolution. This is what he says. The third resolution in the following words, that this assembly doth express explicitly and preemptorily declare. Wow, that's a mouthful. I'll start over again. That this assembly doth explicitly and preemptorily declare that it views the powers of the federal government as resulting from the compact to which the states are parties as limited by the plain sense and intention of the instrument constituting that compact. In other words, that instrument being the Constitution. As no further valid than they are authorized by the grants enumerated. In other words, these powers, this property, these roles, responsibilities, those are basically grants, right? That's something that we delegated to them. We've granted them the ability to exercise these roles, responsibilities, powers, and property. So the grants enumerated. It's not just powers enumerated. It's the grants, because we do give them the responsibility. We do give them specific roles, and we actually did allow them to possess property in that compact. And in that, moving on, this is what he says, and in that case of deliberate, palpable, or blatant, palpable, blatant, same, and dangerous exercise of other powers not granted by the said compact, the states who are parties thereto have the right and are in duty bound to interpose for the arresting progress of the evil and maintaining within them their respective limits the authorities, rights, and liberties appertaining to them. On this, now this is where he goes into explaining some of this. On this resolution, the committee have bestowed all the attention which its importance merits. They have scanned it not merely with a strict, but with a severe eye, and they feel confidence in pronouncing that in its just and fair construction, it is unexceptionably true in its several positions, as well as constitutional and conclusive in its inferences. Excuse me. Now, he goes on and, you know, he says the resolution declares that it views the powers of the federal government as resulting from the compact to which the states are parties. In other words, that the federal powers are derived from the Constitution and that the Constitution is a compact to which the states are parties. Clear as the position must seem, that the federal powers are derived from the Constitution, and from that alone the committee are not unapprised of a late doctrine which opens another source of federal powers not less extensive and important than it is new and unexpected. The examination of this doctrine will be most conveniently connected with a view of succeeding resolution. The committee satisfies themselves here with briefly remarking that in all the contemporary discussions and comments which the Constitution underwent, it was constantly, now I got to emphasize this, it was constantly justified and recommended on the grounds that the powers not given to the government were withheld from it. Can I make that any more clear? And that if any doubt could have existed on this subject under the original text of the Constitution, it is removed as far as words could be removed by it. By the 12th Amendment, by the 12th Amendment, now a part of the Constitution, which expressly declares that the powers not delegated to the United States by the Constitution nor prohibited by it to the states are reserved to the states respectively or to the people. Now, I'm not going to, you know, presume that you caught that. So I think it's really important that I get kind of explain what he just said, because he mentioned the 12th Amendment. And then he read the 10th. So when he looks at the Constitution, when they were looking at the Constitution at this point in time, because the 12th Amendment didn't even exist. Now, when they added amendments to the Constitution, those amendments actually sat there. And when they wrote those, they didn't expire. In other words, they made an amendment. It became a permanent fixture, but it was just not active until it was ratified, which is why he referred to what we call the 10th Amendment as the 12th Amendment. Now, I want you to understand why we don't refer to the 10th Amendment as the 12th Amendment, because the Second Amendment was passed as the 27th Amendment. And technically, what should have happened when the 27th Amendment was ratified, it should have been the Second Amendment, not the 27th, because that amendment was the second article amending the Constitution, Remember, they actually did these, and when we went through the Bill of Rights, they actually went through these things as Article 1, 2, 3, 4, as amendments to the Constitution. Now, I know using the word article kind of confuses people, but, yeah, okay, so you may not like it, but that's what they did. And understanding what they did kind of helps you understand that these amendments that they created were actually permanent fixtures. However, down the road in the 20th century, we actually had amendments that expired. In other words, the progressives tried to use pressure to say, we got to get behind this, we got to do this now or it's going to expire. Because all other amendments that were written prior to that are still sitting out there. If there's no expiration to that amendment. And so all of these different articles out there should actually be sitting. But the reason why they're not there and the reason why the progressive, well, we'll explain this when we come back.
If you run a business or an organization, you already know email is an essential tool for communicating. If you're interested in reducing your overhead and increasing your productivity, I personally recommend you look into AdLocal email marketing services. AdLocal has a special offer for my listeners with email services that start at $10 a month for your first 1,000 addresses. If you want to increase customer retention, grow your market presence, track your statistics, and improve your engagement with your customers with modern, elegant emails that express the personality of your business with emails that integrate with your website, you need to contact AdLocal, and they handle the rest. Take it from me. AdLocal offers the best solutions for all organization sizes, and they lead with their pricing and their 24-hour customer service. Folks, it's time to call AdLocal at 866-88-ADLOCAL or visit them on the web at www.adlocal.com. To become a citizen, one must take an oath to support and defend the Constitution. Those of us who are naturally born citizens are obligated and duty-bound to fulfill the same oath even though we're not required to take it because it is implied upon us at birth. This is why I cannot emphasize enough the importance in supporting businesses who are supporting our Constitution. We have to stop supporting businesses that have chosen to hide behind political correctness, and obviously we must stop supporting progressive businesses who are working to undermine our republic and our Constitution. Do not let businesses or organizations convince you that they are supporting the Constitution by supporting protests for social justice. By definition, social justice is the distribution of wealth, opportunities, and privileges within a society. In other words, they're calling for socialism, which is incompatible with individual liberty and individual sovereignty and our Constitution. With that, please consider supporting businesses who advertise on this show and this radio station. Don't forget, you can call our 24-hour comment line to ask a question or to speak on any topic. Dial 425-270-5416.
Okay, so when we went through the Constitution, I would invite you to go back, because when we started going through the Constitution, I started pointing out, and I actually read amendments that were actually out there or attempted, but didn't become amendments. Now, there are two flavors of amendments, because one of the things I shared with you is in 1803, Thomas Jefferson realized that the federal government couldn't create land or designate land for the Indians to be able to occupy. And he wanted to basically delegate or grant that power to the federal government so that he could have taken the Louisiana Territory and actually given that to the Indians. Now, had that amendment gone through both houses, so as the President of the United States, there's no doubt in my mind he lobbied heavily to try to get Congress to pass that as an amendment to send to the states. He couldn't get it through Congress. And even though keep in mind, these were Republican states, I don't believe that the state leaders saw it the way Jefferson wanted it. I don't believe that they wanted to actually have potentially a hostile nation right on our borders, and or potentially an area between us, between coast to coast, because The expansion of the United States was planned long before Thomas Jefferson. The expansion of the United States was planned in Britain. When they started creating colonies, they literally projected the colony from the Atlantic seashore, such as the Carolinas. That would actually go all the way across the United States to the Pacific Ocean. And so if you ever looked at some of the projections of the map, they actually showed those things. So anyway, the paradigm was that all the land, you know, even though we may not possess it yet, in this particular case, the land that we just spent money on, we're going to give it to somebody else? It was contrary to, you know, average thinking. I mean, nobody wants to, you know, spend money to just give away. But Jefferson had this concept in two ways, because I told you that it was his idea to actually buy land in Africa so that we could actually repatriate and create a sovereign nation for Liberia, or creating Liberia and the freemen, or those no longer indentured servants or slaves that were in America, an opportunity to leave, to basically get away from the biases that were baked in because of what the kings and the monarchies of Britain had done to America. And some people understand that, but they don't understand what Jefferson was trying to do. Jefferson wasn't trying to necessarily create a genocidal type of, you know, society like Hitler. What he wanted to do was he wanted to make sure that those people who we were displacing, because under the laws of nations, a nation could actually assume another nation, especially if that nation was, let's just say, uncivilized. It didn't have the ability. And so, right, wrong, or indifferent, this was the law of the European, you know, community, and America basically adopted it because it was a part of the Western society that created these laws. And so, in some ways, these lands were being called and set aside for kingdoms and God. And so, in America, we didn't have a kingdom anymore, but we did have a strategic view of trying to expand the United States so that we could enjoy tranquility and security from sea to shining sea. So anyway, when they came up with these amendments, some of them that went into Congress that never made it through Congress, those shouldn't be articles. They should be ancillary notes that there was an attempt to make an article, but it's just a little asterisk. In other words, it doesn't receive an article number. However, when an amendment actually goes through Congress, like the Bill of Rights, when Congress passed them, they passed all 12 articles. So there were 12 articles out there. Even though they may not have been ratified, they were still there for the states to ratify. This is why the first article is being suppressed and hidden by not listing these official articles anymore, and by the way they change the numbering of the amendments. This is an underhanded way to get the people to not understand that why was this amendment to change the apportionment of representation of people in an amendment? Because Congress claims that they can do it. Why did they create this? See, all of a sudden, when we start looking at an amendment, and I'm sorry for going down this rat hole, but it really bears significance. When we look at amendments that have not been ratified, we should be able to shine the light on saying, well, oh, here is something that is addressing something within the Constitution or something that's not within the Constitution that they would like to change. And in this particular case, they weren't changing apportionment for the people with the 30,000 to 40,000 and the 40,000 to 50,000. In this particular amendment, they weren't changing Congress to have full discretion. They actually created a hard limitation to ensure that Congress could not be, that one representative in Congress, in the House of Representatives, could not represent more than 30,000. Then it would grow to 40,000. Then it would grow to 50,000. And that was it. Instead, in the 1900s, when all of a sudden Congress had overgrown its seats, it basically says, now we're going to regulate this, when clearly they knew that they couldn't, which is why they created the amendment. Folks, there's a lot to be garnered from these constitutional amendments that actually made it through Congress to say, even Congress admitted that they couldn't do this. You want a First Amendment petition? There you go. I'm just giving you this argument. But my point is that when we started looking at what was in the Constitution and what Madison just stated, there was a reason why he mentioned the 12th Amendment or the 12th article of the amendments, which was the 10th Amendment. And the reason why they did it was because it was a part of the Constitution. It wasn't active, but Congress had basically said, you know, the states have this, and as long as the states have either accepted or rejected. See, the 11th Amendment, or I should say, that first amendment, that first article on the 30,000, it has never been rejected. In other words, it would require 38 states to reject it to have it stricken. But the states have never gone out of the way to reject it. We have 11 states that have actually ratified it, and none have rejected it. They failed to ratify, that's all. And so here's the thing, folks. All we've got to do, you want to drain the swamp? All we need is a president. Remember, I started the show off talking about what America deserves and what America needs. America needs a president to point to that one article in the amendment process, right there, Article 1, which would have been our First Amendment. And basically, it is the First Amendment to the Constitution, and demanded that the states actually ratify that. If you want to drain the swamp, you just get rid of it. Making the House of Representatives go back to actually representing 50,000 people, it would send every single one of your congresspeople home. And Congress knows this. This would be a major shot across the bow. How can the lobbyists, if your congresspeople are having to operate at the state house or your county buildings, depending on the size of the state or what have you, how is it that your Congress can actually effectively be lobbied by the lobbyists if they have to drive over, you know, hell and high water just to get to enough people? Those folks way up in Maine and the folks in you know, the representatives in Maine, Wyoming, and some of these flyover states may not get as much business and love. And it would become very obvious because now we'll actually see who's going through the turnstiles of all these different buildings across the United States, these government offices, state, county, or what have you. And now we'll know who's doing what and why they're doing this. Now we'll know the lobbyists, those people that are actually operating, because it's all hidden behind the curtain in Washington, D.C. So forgive me for going down this rat hole, but I thought it was paramount that we, you know, kind of help you understand the importance of what we're trying to do here in reclaiming the republic. If we understand all of the pieces, all of the little weapons on the table, these amendments that are sitting out there, or the amendment that we can rescind, like the 17th Amendment, we can really shake them up and knock them on their butts using the Constitution. But more importantly, we have all of the power. This is why we're going through these resolutions, to really prove to you the power that we absolutely possess over this Constitution. So getting back to what basically Madison said, as a matter of fact, I'm going to reemphasize what he said here, quote, "It was constantly justified during the ratification debates," he's talking right here, "it was constantly justified and recommended for them to ratify on the ground that the powers not given to the government were withheld from it." Okay, so I'm going to jump down now because that was paragraph 14. We read all the way through paragraph 14. Now, in 15, there's a little highlight at the very end of this. So what we want to do is I just want to get into this little highlight. And so when we come back, we'll get into, I'll look through this. We may read the whole paragraph. But when we get to 18, you're going to love the manna from heaven because it will be falling all over you. Anyway, we'll be right back after these two promos.
To set the record straight, Republic Review is neither an Article 5 convention nor a convention of states. In accordance with Article 5 of the Constitution, this convention requires two-thirds of the states to apply to Congress to convene a convention with the intent to amend the Constitution. This convention is unable to solve our real problem, which is non-compliance to the Constitution, and would be dangerous to convene at this time. In contrast, Republic Review is the process of the states exerting its constitutional authority over the Constitution. An audit does not require an application to Congress. This authority is inherent to principal stakeholders of a contract. Why do we need Republic Review? Because this is the only way the states can deal with the federal encroachments into roles, responsibilities, and powers that belong to the states. To learn more about Republic Review, please go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to read my content and my model on the audit and Republic Review process. Folks, as you know, online fraud is on the rise, and it's more important than ever for your new and existing customers to be able to determine whether they are using a website with a secured connection. If you didn't know, Google mandated in 2017 that all data submitted to its linked websites must be secure with SSL certificates. Without SSL certificates, your site is listed by Google as not secure. In other words, without these certificates, your site will be harder to find, and this will impact new traffic and ultimately your revenue. Whether you're a blogger or in e-commerce, AdLocal will help protect your website from all forms of data breaches, phishing scams, and build a secure environment for your businesses, big or small. Contact AdLocal by calling 866-88-ADLOCAL or visit them on the web at www.adlocal.com for custom pricing. As a reminder, if you have any questions or comments, we have a 24-hour comment line, 425-270-5416.
Okay, so I'm going to defer to actually reading the whole thing. And that's just due to the fact that this is packed. This report on the Virginia resolutions written by James Madison just a little after Thomas Jefferson's 1999 or 1799 resolutions. This is so packed with meat that I can't skip over this. Even though I've highlighted very specific parts, this is a five-page document, and it's sad. It's pathetic that I actually have to highlight and extrapolate small little sentences to get people to read this stuff when the entire document, you know, in its entirety is just it's prodigiously powerful. It is so immense in helping people understand. I mean, it's almost like the entire windows of heaven and the full glory of God, you know, just incinerates somebody or just consumes that person in a either in a good or bad way, right? And so it's all God's will, right? Anyway, 15. The other position involved in this branch of the resolution, namely, quote, that the states are parties to the Constitution, close quote, or compact, is, in the judgment of the committee, equally free from objection. It is indeed true that the term, quote, states, close quote, is sometimes used in a vague sense and sometimes in different senses according to the subject to which it is applied. Thus, it sometimes means the separate sanctions of territories occupied by the political societies within each, sometimes the particular governments established by those societies, sometimes those societies as organized into those particular governments, and lastly, it means the people composing those political societies in their highest sovereign capacity. Although it might be wished that the perfection of language admitted less diversity in the signification, interesting, of the same words, yet little inconveniences is produced by it, where the true sense can be collected with certainty from the different applications. Now, he just basically explained the usage of the term states. In the present instance, whatever different construction of the term states, see, if I just started off with this, you wouldn't have understood that he actually took, you know, 10 lines in a paragraph to explain how states can be used. Now he gets into how he is specifically using this. In the present instance, whatever different construction of the term, quote, states, close quote, in the resolution may have been entertained, all will at least concur in the last sentiment because in that sense, the Constitution was submitted to the states. In that sense, the states ratified it. And in that sense, the term states are consequently parties to the compact from which the powers of the federal government result. Now, again, I err in continuing to read because I think this is all so relevant. So instead of just highlighting and jumping down to 18, here's paragraph 16. The next position is that the General Assembly views the powers of the federal government, quote, as limited by the plain sense and intention of the instrument constituting that compact, close quote. When I'm reading these quotes, these are quotes out of those resolutions. And, quote, as no further valid than they are authorized by the grants therein enumerated, close quote. It does not seem possible that any just objection can lie against either of these clauses. The first amounts merely to a declaration that the compact ought to have the interpretation plainly intended by the parties to it. Now, what he just said is how that baby was defined. Do you understand that? Because he alludes to this, you know, later on, and he alludes to this in other ways. He alluded to this earlier, that the Constitution, as understood by the states at ratification, that's how it is to be interpreted. So I'll read this again. The first amounts merely to a declaration that the compact ought to have the interpretation plainly intended by the parties to it. Now, this goes back to my supposition where they failed. Now, they may not have failed. I have no evidence to say that they did this, but if they didn't, this is what they should have done. When a new state came into the Union, the state legislatures should have forwarded their ratification debates, a copy of their ratification debates, to this new state. And they should have all instructed this state, here is how we understood, you know, so that you have our copy and you need to understand how all of these ratification debates as an amalgamation, as a complete package, joining all of these together is the clear definition of how we are to understand the Constitution and interpret it. Not based on some crystal ball by people dressed in black robes. Wow. Going on here, this is what Madison says. The other to the declaration that it ought to have the execution and effect intended by them, if the powers granted be valid, it is solely because they are granted. And if the granted powers are valid because granted, all other powers not granted must not be valid. I don't know if you can hear me pounding on the desk as I'm reading, punctuating each syllable. The resolution, having taken this view of the federal compact, proceeds to infer, quote, that in case of a deliberate, blatant, or palpable, that's what he says, palpable, blatant and dangerous exercise of the powers not granted by the said compact, the states who are parties thereto have the right and are duty-bound to interpose for arresting the progress of evil and for maintaining within their respective limits the authorities, rights, and liberties appertaining to them. What I just read in that quote, close quote there, what I just read in that quote was the big meaty part of the third resolution in the Virginia resolutions. And so now he's gotten to the crux of the matter. Many times I have told you, my friends, that the states are, or I should say, in a representative government, in a Republican form of government, our legislators bear the responsibility, the legal, we designed this so that we made them legally bound to support that Constitution, which means that your county commissioners now bear that legal binding responsibility, because as we've grown as a government, we have expanded to the point to where we now have 20 plus thousand legislators across all the counties of America. And I've never counted how many county commissioners, supervisors, you know, county legislators there are, parish legislators for Louisiana. But the bottom line is, folks, it's probably over 20,000 people. And what this means is if they do not understand the Constitution and how they're supposed to be supporting it, then you can clearly see that we are in harm's way, because when somebody comes along and says, you got to pass this law, you got to do this, we pass this law, and now this has to be implemented in the county. They should be the ultimate filters. They should be, and as a matter of fact, every county should have a constitutional compliance office. And that county should actually, you know, drive the constitutional compliance to the state and ensure that the state's constitutional compliance. Because, see, our government is a bottom-up government. Our government is, we the people create or establish our governments. And we established a county government, which means that our county government is the most powerful government in all of the world, because our county government has the authority to hold the governments above it accountable to the Constitution. And if we get enough counties in your state to demand your state's full compliance of the Constitution, ergo, we now have the power to interpose and basically politically force them. So let's just say we literally get to a civil war point. The civil war point would be this. If you have red counties and you actually have your red counties with grand jury indictments, you indict your governor for violating the Constitution, your sheriff has the duty, is responsible to have a warrant for the arrest of your governor so that he can be removed from office. Because if it demands that he be removed, then he must be removed. Because bottom line, Section 3 of the 14th Amendment, the supreme law of the land, states that anybody that fails to support the Constitution while they're under oath can no longer occupy that office and must be banned from public service for life. It's a beautiful thing. The thing that we've been given, this thing that we've been entrusted with, as I said, we have an immune system. The only reason the immune system isn't working is because of the magnitude of illiteracy and lack of understanding on this Constitution. This is why I feel it is far more important to educate and invigorate you to get engaged than it is to entertain you. There's plenty of entertainment out there. I'm not going to compete with that. I want to compete in empowering you. I'm G.R. Mobley. We're Reclaiming the Republic, and we need your help. God bless.
Folks, I'm constantly providing you with case after case and giving you both the empirical information as well as irrefutable academic evidence that the federal government is operating well outside the bounds of the Constitution. In measuring outlays, the federal government is spending over 80% of your tax dollars on unconstitutional government. This is why we don't need a balanced budget amendment. We just need to enforce the Constitution. So what is it going to take for you to take a stand in getting the federal government back into the framework of the Constitution?
To be clear, the solution is simple and does not require much work on any one individual, especially if everyone contributed to the effort. We only ask that you make a commitment today to contributing however you can and make the difference necessary for our posterity's sake. Send me an email at info@reclaimingtherepublic.org and let me know how you'd like to help so we can help you save our republic.